See you again.
So we got some fun to this night.
We don't.
Speak from the heart.
I think they're all on. We can't gossip about people. They're gonna hear us.
Oh, no, exactly.
Okay, let's get started. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the second briefing of the second day of the 2019 General Assembly. My name is Chieko Noguchi, and I'm the Director of Public Affairs for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. I'm here with Bishop Michael Burbidge of the Diocese of Arlington, who is chairman of the USCCB's Committee on Communications, and he'll be introducing our panelists today. Your Excellency.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. So the panelists today who presented to the body of bishops are also here to respond to any of your questions. Honored to introduce Archbishop Charles Chaput, the Archbishop of Philadelphia, and the chairman of the Committee on Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth, who presented a pastoral plan and framework for marriage and family life ministry and advocacy. We are also Bishop Frank Caggiano, Bishop Bridgeport, member of the Committee on Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth. Bishop Caggiano was also the Bishop Delegate for 2018 Synod on the Young People, Faith, and Vocational Discernment, and the Bishop of Bridgeport, and Bishop Nelson Perez, the Bishop of Cleveland, the Chairman of the Committee on Cultural Diversity in the Church, joined by two of our young adults who presented to the body of bishops today, and thank you for that wonderful presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Bishop.
Okay. Would you like to introduce our guests, Bishop Perez?
Brenda.
Brenda Noriega from the Diocese of San Bernardino.
Brian Rude from the Catholic Apostolate Center in Washington, D.C.
Welcome. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Your Excellency. We'll go ahead and open the floor to questions from members of the media. I would ask that that the questions pertain to the items that were discussed by the Assembly in this afternoon's session. If you have a question, I would ask that you signal to me and I'll call on you. Please note your name and your news organization and to whom you wish to address your question. And for the benefit of those who are joining us over the live stream broadcast, I would ask that you wait till someone on our staff can bring over a microphone before you ask your question. First question goes to JD.
Thank you, JD Flynn, and thank you, Chieko. And I hope you'll permit me a little bit of liberty, because my question, Archbishop Chaput, is for you, but it's about this morning. You had a theological disagreement this morning, but I'm not sure I completely understood it. And I wonder if you could help us to understand what the issues were at stake as the bishops discussed the letter on faithful citizenship.
I don't know that I understood it either, so I don't know that I can do what you've asked me to do. I know that it was suggested by one of the bishops that if you were in favor of seeing the abortion issue as foundational for our advocacy as bishops, somehow that was in opposition to the teaching of Pope Francis, and there's no way that could be the case. I think it's around those kind of issues. How much do we focus our attention on the life issues over and against focusing on social justice issues? But if you see life issue as a social justice issue, that kind of goes away. All of them are extraordinarily important. All of them are about human dignity, but there's something foundational about human life. It's been part of the perception of the American bishops for generations of bishops, actually. So that doesn't put us in opposition to anything, because Pope Francis is clearly against the abuse of life in any circumstances. But it was suggested publicly that that somehow us holding that position would be acting in a way that would present us as enemies of Pope Francis. I think that's just an artificial kind of argument that's not true. Okay. But you'd have to ask the other part of the discussion for clarification of their point of view.
Okay. The next question goes to Mark.
Mark Patterson from Catholic News Service. Question for you, Archbishop Chaput, from this afternoon. How confident are you about Catholic family life in the United States being shored up, being able to be an effective witness to their neighborhoods, their civic life, their nation? And can Catholic family life have, for lack of a better term, a halo effect on marriage and family life for families in the United States who aren't necessarily Catholic?
Well, I think we're very confident that's the case. I think many of us have our own experiences in our diocese, how strong families, their life radiates out from that to many other issues. Strong families really are the foundation of most parochial life, really. I mean, that doesn't mean there aren't people who are very strongly committed who come from broken families, but it's very clear that intact families where people love and support one another faithfully in marriage is a happier and healthier environment for the raising of children. So I think that should be the goal of all of us. And I think it's difficult for families to survive at all without the support of other families. And that's what the church is trying to do here, trying to bring families together under the teachings of Jesus Christ, encouraging them to be good, faithful families for each other in the family, but also for the parish communities and then the broader community around them. But do we have confidence that works? Absolutely, because I think most of us know that from our human experience.
The next question goes to Regina.
Regina Garcia with Associated Press. Bishop Perez, when you presented today, a lot of the bishops brought up the issue of Catholic education and making sure that Catholic schools are open to immigrants and Hispanic families. I'm wondering how confident you are that it could potentially be achieved, as some of them mentioned. Catholic schools are not, the financial circumstances are not open to everybody, and I don't know if in certain states tax credits and vouchers are really controversial. So what do you see as a path to get them, you know, to get those families to have access to Catholic schools?
Tuition assistance is one aspect of it, but I don't think it's all just financial, though, either. I think it's also institutional. So there has to be a bridge between that an educational institution and an ethnic group, in our case, in that conversation, the Hispanic community, where you could do all the marketing you want and have all the money you want for the student. But if the family, if the parents are unable to engage and interact with the administration and the teachers of that school, then the communication falls apart. So many dioceses have developed all sorts of programs for companions or advocates. In New York, they call them advocates, or madrinas, they call it, where they all do basically the same thing. Establish a bridge between that learning institution and the community so that it's not just accessible financially, right, and institutionally, but also in terms of culture and also in terms of language. So there has to be a bridge that brings that together.
Mm-hmm. And they have to be invited. You know, they have to be invited to be considered themselves as part of that kind of community.
Okay. Next question goes to Dennis.
Dennis Sadowski, Catholic News Service. Underlying everything this afternoon seemed to be the talk of immigration and the controls that are at the border, that the government is trying to impact. And it affects families, it affects parishes, it affects all our local communities. So I'm wondering, how far are the bishops overall and the bishops individually willing to go to push the issue with federal lawmakers, federal policymakers, and also to engage young people because they're the future of the church? So how far are you willing to go? I mean, you know, how radical do you want to get?
It's hard to answer that question because I don't know how you understand far and radical. Okay. But what does that mean?
Well,
you know, what does that mean?
I think more political activity.
From my understanding, and my experience, the USCCB has been very active, actually, in promoting and advocating and lobbying for immigration, comprehensive immigration reform for a long time now, and there is constant interaction between the USCCB and members of the Hill as well as the administration to push that that reality forward.
May I just add a thought? And my experience is that the more confrontational one becomes, the less you achieve. That it's the path of conversation and dialogue that's probably the most effective. And I think the conference has been very effective in that, raising questions, having reasoned dialogue, and those who are reasonable will respond. So that would be my suggestion.
You know, also, we before we talk about confronting the government, we haven't been successful with our own people in the church. You know, and that seems to be where our greatest ability to convince people would be. Can we convince our Catholic people? And so we have to convince them in ways that are both reasonable and gospel. They have to be convinced by the teachings of Jesus and not see us as instruments of this or that political party. Mm-hmm. I think that many of us have had hearings in dioceses and things like that. Even after that, do our people follow our teaching? Doesn't seem like it's worked very well. So something's, we're not, I don't know why it doesn't work, but it doesn't work very well. I don't think we have had a lot of success with our own Catholic people. Well, if we could get our people to be on our side, it would work legislatively because they would lobby their politicians. But they know, the politicians know, that somehow we don't have our people on our side. We have many of them, by the way. And I think many people have goodwill, but many of them are, they're not convinced by the political parties of our country to embrace their techniques of achieving these goals, I guess. You guys have any...
I would agree with that, absolutely. I think we need to advocate among our own people as well.
If we could run it, we have a great program because there's no better program for dealing with the issues of immigration than those of the Catholic Church. You know, they're wonderful principles. If we apply them, they'd be very effective, but somehow it hasn't been able to seep into the lives of our parishes and our people.
And I think as you say, how far will you go? It's could be summarized as we'll never tire. We will never tire of preaching, teaching the mandate of the gospel, and persevering, even in the midst of what seems to be a lack of success. We will not tire.
Pablo?
Pablo K., Angeles News from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. My question is for Archbishop Chaput. As you wrap up your term as chairmanship of this Family Life Committee, it seems like sometimes in the getting the teachings of the church to reach the culture, it seems like sometimes we're fighting a losing battle. But especially during these last few years in your term, what gives you the most hope?
Well, what gives me the most hope is meeting young people who understand what the church means by marriage and family and embraces it, and to see successful programs in accomplishing that on college campuses and the like. That always gives me hope when you see it really working. What gives me the least amount of hope is the rate of cohabitation among the people who have come to us to be married in the church. It's just huge. You know, we just haven't been able to get that message clearly across either. And even parents who are, you know, good practicing Catholics don't seem to object to their children living together anymore, which is always a great concern to me too, because if we don't have the family teaching that, if it's just the church teaching it, we don't have much success. That's why the family is so very important. If the church teaches it and the family doesn't, we're not gonna win, because we, you know, our voice is small compared to the voice of mom and dad in the family. And that's, I thought my greatest hope is meeting people who believe it and live it, and my despair is the rate of cohabitation. I think it's about 80% I've seen. You know.
Okay. Next question goes to Enrique.
Thank you. Shunshad Communicators and Silam, to you guys, to the youth and Bishop Cayano, a short question and might be a short answer. Pope Francis is changing our pastoral minds. And how would you summarize Christus Vivit in one sentence? Might be long, but might be in one sentence. Is it possible?
I don't think it's possible, but I will say that Christus Vivit is it's a message of hope. It's a love letter from a pastor that is bringing this sense of urgency to the young people to, one, learn to assess their own reality, the reality of their communities, to articulate that reality, and then to discern that reality and take action, having the light, having Christ at the center of the conversation.
I don't know if I can summarize in one sentence. That's a tall task, but I can give a one-sentence suggestion, and that would be to read the entire document through the lens of chapter 4. Because what Pope Francis tells us, these truths of our relationship with Christ and the nature of God, which to some of us might seem to be very simple, we've known these for years, the reality is that not everyone does know that. But what we'll see is when we read these truths that Christ loves us, he suffers with us, he died, and he saves us. And then we read the following chapters and the preceding chapters, we'll see that everything that Pope Francis has given us in this document, when read through that lens, witnesses the kerygma in, I think, a very profound way. So that's where I would start. I can't give you a summary, though.
Okay. We're running out of time, but we have time for one more question. It's going to JD.
JD again. Brendan, Brian, my question is for you. And, you know, yesterday we heard Bishop Barron give a talk about what will help young people to practice the faith, and now we're blessed because we have some young people here. And so I just wonder if you would talk to us about your experience of what is it that among your peers and among young people, what are the things that attract them to practice the faith or support them or encourage them in practicing the faith?
I would say that when we talk about young people and youth and young adults and then our peers, I mean, we are young adults, but there is a diversity of them. There are some young people that really need to encounter Christ through us, not theology, not Catholic morality, nothing, you know, of the mind, but that they really need to encounter a risen Christ through somebody who cares about them. Because when young people are starving, when young people are concerned about the student loans, when young people are in prison, right now I'm in communications with a family of this young girl who is 18. Her family is from Venezuela, and she is in one of the detention centers in Arizona. And this young girl, Billy, is very involved in her church, or used to be very involved in Venezuela. But with these young people, in the moment, what they need is the living gospel. Not just information and the statistics, but they need the living gospel. And then we have others who have already encountered Christ, who love Christ, and they want to grow. And I think Christus Vivit, Pope Francis tells us, only two things are necessary when it comes to ministry with young people. The first one, it's outreach, and the second one is growth. And when it comes to growth, then in outreach, we talk about the kerygma first. And then on growth, we help them to grow in their faith. And then it comes all the teachings, you know. But we cannot go to one side or the other, be way too pastoral, or then just stay in the teachings of the church. We have to practice the teachings. And that is also attractive to the young people when they see us genuinely practicing the teachings of the church.
A lot of my context, I mean, like I said in the presentation, I was confirmed just over 3 years ago. So a lot of the context that I have comes from my experience at Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. And I'll say, I think it comes down to two things. The first, and it's not just to repeat my main point from my presentation earlier, but is accompaniment. I was blessed to participate in a student ministry program that CUA has. And it's a very special program. We're about 23 students from sophomore to senior are chosen to minister to the campus and to the residents on campus. And what I found was that it was great that we had students that would always come. They would always go to Mass. They would always come to our events. They would always do this. But then there were those students who, you know, are Catholic, who might go to Mass sometimes. What I found, and what we all found as ministers, is that if we just cling to those events, if we just cling to those things, we're never going to get those people. And not that we're not going to get them, we're never going to help them to experience Christ. So I think the first is accompaniment, and that comes in all shapes and forms. That people, we're relational. You can find that, if you want to go theological, you can look at the nature of the Trinity, that is relational, and that if we're made in the image and likeness of God, then we too are relational. So what keeps people coming is that relationship, that witness, that they see Christ through that. And then secondarily is community that is formed in part due to that witness, that once people have seen what Christ is doing in the lives of others, they want to share that. You know, I know all the statistics and polls and all these things tell us that young people today are so individualistic, and you know they refuse any sort of community and are just face to the ground, keep walking straight. And I'll say in my experience on my campus and with my friends, that's not true. Young people are really searching and desiring community. So once we're accompanying and showing Christ to others, the community forms, and that's where we breed the parishes and the families that Archbishop Chaput is talking about that help the church to continue to go out.
May I just make a comment? Enrique, you asked for a single sentence to summarize Christus Vivit. Allow me to offer you a picture instead. So right here, we have young people invited to the table who speak articulately with wisdom and pastoral insight, who are assuming leadership in the church. That is what Christus Vivit is all about.
And I would add to that, Bishop, that we often talk about those that are not there, right? But I can't just think about them, right? Those that are, and my experience as the Bishop of Cleveland is encountering dozens and dozens of young adults who are alive for their faith and love Christ and are searching for that sense of community. Yes, they might be smaller in number as they were before, but so was the remnant of Israel at one point, right? That the big people of God was left as a little remnant. Archbishop spoke about that early on when he went to Philadelphia. I don't know if you remember that, Archbishop, when he was my Archbishop. And he spoke about, yes, that we might be a smaller church, like a remnant, but a more intense and more intentional and holier church.
Okay. Well, thank you, Your Excellencies, and to our special guests. This concludes.